Greetings. Welcome to Media Matters. I'm Bob McChesney. You're listening to WILL AM 580 from beautiful Urbana, Illinois. Today, wrapping up this July 4th week celebration in the United States, we have an appropriate show for you. We're going to be discussing the state of civil liberties in the United States today with the author of an extraordinary and, I think, deeply disturbing book about the state of free speech and civil liberties in the United States, Matt Rothschild, joining us today to talk about his brand new book, You Have No Rights. But first, before we go to Matt Rothschild, let's go to Media Minutes.
Welcome to Media Minutes, a weekly review of news relating to the intersection of media and democracy. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Kimberly Cronick.
The struggle to keep webcasting in business is moving in part to the courts. Ever since the Library of Congress's Copyright Royalty Board ruled earlier this year to impose draconian royalty rates on copyrighted content streamed online, webcasters have been living under the threat of fiscal death when those rates retroactively went into effect later this summer. An appeal to the CRB was dismissed. Now several groups with a stake in webcasting, including National Public Radio, Yahoo, America Online, and several independent streamers, have filed a motion in the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals to have the CRB's rate structure stayed indefinitely. This as momentum in Congress swings in favor of action toward the imposition of a revised, fairer royalty rate structure on webcasting. Currently, the Internet Radio Equality Act has more than 110 sponsors in the House of Representatives and three in the Senate. Sound Exchange, an entity that would oversee the collection of streaming royalty payments and is mostly funded by the major label record industry, senses that the political landscape is shifting on the issue and has since expressed a willingness to negotiate on an extension of the current rate structure, which Congress imposed on the industry following a similar crisis 5 years ago. At the same time, record labels have begun lobbying Congress to impose the same per-song, per-play royalty rate system for webcasting on broadcast radio, which for decades has enjoyed an exemption from recording royalties and instead pays a much lower yearly fee to music publishing companies directly. The Recording Industry Association of America sees an income stream from such a system amounting to hundreds of millions of dollars per year. The broadcast industry calls such a proposal a, quote, performance tax.
Quest, the number three phone company in the United States, is having a banner year. It ended last year with $600 million in profits and a share price that continues to rise. Who gets the credit for this positive performance? According to the company's board of directors, out of Quest's 38,000 employees, CEO Dick Notabart is number one. That's why he made more than $30 million last year in salary, bonuses, stock options, and sales, and various perks. This does not include another $17 million in stock options that he received to boot. That makes Notabart's compensation 1,600 times that of the average Quest worker. And of every $100 the company made last year, Notabart took more than $4 for himself. Meanwhile, Quest has slashed the health care and retirement benefits of its current and former employees and faces a federal lawsuit for allegedly refusing to pay overtime to customer service workers. This may be why Mr. Notabart announced he's getting out while the getting's good. Though he hasn't set an official resignation date, he says he'll be ready to leave once the company finds a qualified successor. No word yet on how opulent Notabart's retirement package will be.
A class action lawsuit against the nation's major phone companies runs into a dead end in the U.S. Supreme Court. In a 7-2 decision, the court has dismissed a lawsuit alleging that customers were defrauded out of billions of dollars by the major phone companies, including AT&T, Verizon, and Quest, who colluded with each other in order to carve out service territories that each company could dominate and the rates they would charge for competing service. The Supreme Court said there wasn't enough evidence made available for the lawsuit to proceed. An attorney for consumers who pressed the case says it's disturbing that the High Court wouldn't even allow the suit to proceed into the discovery phase, where such evidence is most likely to be uncovered.
There's a suspicious alliance underway between the Knight Foundation, which is well known for giving grants to support new journalism projects, and Viacom, one of the largest media conglomerates in the world. The Knight Foundation just gave a $700,000 News Challenge grant to Viacom-owned MTV to promote the use of cell phones as video cameras by teens during the 2008 presidential elections. The idea is that MTV viewers can record and report upon candidate stops where they live. The clips and reports will be hosted on MTV.com, and a select few will actually be aired on the network itself. However, this project does not disclose what data will be collected on cell phone users and whether behavior profiling techniques will be used on the data to target market to MTV's phone reporters. Such is the state of mainstream media that a not-for-profit group has to pay a wildly profitable media conglomerate to program such public interest initiatives, when the conglomerate itself makes more money every day than the entire Knight Foundation grant is worth.
You've been listening to Media Minutes, a joint production of the Illinois Initiative for Media Policy Research at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and Free Press, a national nonpartisan organization dedicated to media democracy. For more information, visit our website at freepress.net.
Greetings. Welcome back to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, here in WILL AM 580 from beautiful Urbana, Illinois, coming to you from Campbell Hall on the campus of the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. Today, wrapping up the July 4th week of celebrations, we have, I think, the appropriate guest for you, Matt Rothschild, editor of the Progressive Magazine based out of Madison, Wisconsin, who's been a frequent guest on our program, has a brand new book just published this week on Wednesday on July 4th, formally released, You Have No Rights, Stories of America in an Age of Repression. Matt Rothschild is joining us today on the phone. Matt, welcome to Media Matters.
Bob, thanks so much for having me on.
Well, I think I can think of no better book to consider during July 4th week than this new book that you have written. As I told you off air, and I've already told people who I've seen since I've read the book, this is the ideal book, I think, to give to anyone who you're wondering whether they're still alive. Because if you read this book, if you know, you will have a pulse racing and your temperature will be up to 300 degrees Fahrenheit, because it's an extraordinary story you tell here.
Well, it's hard not to get agitated when you read this book, because so many of our rights have been violated in the Bush age. And it's one thing to talk about those rights being violated in the abstract, or this law, the Patriot Act, or the Military Commissions Act, but when you see what happens to individuals and how their rights have been trampled on in specific cases, I think it really drives it home. And so that's why I tried to focus on these little stories, just one little story after another, about people whose rights have been violated. Sometimes they prevail when they fight back and go to court, and sometimes they don't prevail and they are convicted or they have to cop a plea or they lose their job. I mean, there's a lot of different negative consequences that have occurred, and I think when people recognize that, wow, this might be happening to my neighbor, or this could happen to my friend, or this could happen to this colleague I know who is a little more politically active than I am, but hardly, you know, a terrorist, that you begin to realize how chilly the atmosphere has been here in the Bush age.
Matt Rothschild, you call the book You Have No Rights, Stories of America in an Age of Repression, just published this week by New Press. That's a pretty stark title, You Have No Rights. Where did you come up with that?
Well, it's actually true. I mean, because our rights have been stripped from Bush, and under the Military Commissions Act, we essentially have no rights, because Bush can call any of us an enemy combatant. And if you're not a U.S. citizen, you can be thrown into a jail or a prison and never get to see a lawyer or a judge again, just on the president's determination. So what rights do we actually have? But I got the title from a group of Egyptians who are here in the United States after 9/11. They've been here for many years. The police raid their apartment, and maybe it was understandable in the weeks after 9/11 to raid apartments of Egyptian Americans, because Mohammed Atta was an Egyptian who was in the United States. But what wasn't okay was the way these people were treated. So I tell the story of Yasser and Hani Ibrahim, brothers. They were taken to the Metropolitan Detention Center in New York City, and they were abused. They had their heads banged against the wall and the door as they were being led into the Metropolitan Detention Center. They were forced to kiss the American flag that was on one of their walls, and then they had their ankles shackled together, and the guards there would routinely play a sadistic game. They would step on the chain between their ankles repeatedly. So they're trying to walk. Yasser and Hani Ibrahim are trying to walk to their cell or from their cell, and they would be tripped by the guards stepping on the chain. You can imagine how that hurt. And so finally, after, you know, one series of abuses after another, one of the Ibrahims asks a person who works for the Metropolitan Detention Center, "What about our human rights here?" And the person responds, "You have no rights."
And this book has 82 episodes of average Americans, average people, people just like the listeners of this show, just like the hosts and guests on this show, having no rights, just having the government come in and do stuff to us that I think when I was growing up, I thought was impossible. I just said, I was raised to think this sort of stuff just doesn't happen here. And this is a book filled of examples that have happened in the past 6 years. Now, Matt Rothschild, at the Progressive Magazine, where you're the editor and where you've been now for, dare I say it, close to a quarter century, this has been a beat your magazine has been covering since you've been there, along with your predecessor, Irwin Knoll, the late great editor of the Progressive. So you've got a – because of that, you've had a chance to really put this current period in historical perspective.
Yeah, I mean, the First Amendment is one of the bedrock principles of the Progressive Magazine, defense of free speech. And Irwin Knoll, my beloved predecessor here, who worked here for 21 years, I actually acknowledge in the beginning of the book, because he had an episode similar to one that I have in the book, in that he and a colleague of mine at the time, Kenan Peck, came up with a brilliant idea of taking leaflets into shopping malls and making shopping malls free areas where you should be able to express your free speech, because they're like, it's like Main Street now. Everything's a huge shopping mall. And if you can't walk down the hallways of the shopping mall and exercise your free speech rights, that's cordoning off a whole lot of America in this day and age from free speech. And so Irwin Knoll and Kenan Peck came up with the idea of handing out the Bill of Rights in the shopping malls here in Madison, Wisconsin. And actually, they were arrested and charged for violating private property by handing out copies of the Bill of Rights. So this book is in keeping with that. The case that I mention in the book that is eerily reminiscent of that story of handing out the Bill of Rights in the mall is about three teachers in Oregon who in 2004, when Bush was on the campaign trail, speaking at one of the most public places in their county in Oregon, in the county stadium, they went to the county stadium to hear the president speak, and they had on their T-shirts a saying that said, "Protect our civil liberties." And for wearing T-shirts that said, "Protect our civil liberties," they were kicked out of the county stadium.
Quite astonishing. Our guest, Matt Rothschild, author of the new book, You Have No Right, Stories of America in an Age of Repression, just published this week on July 4th, appropriately enough, by New Press, and now available, I hope, in fine bookstores everywhere. Matt Rothschild is also the editor of the Progressive Magazine and has been a frequent guest here on Media Matters in the past. I'm Bob McChesney, your host, of course. This show was taped shortly before the weekend, so please do not call in with a question today or a comment. Sit back, relax, enjoy the show. Matt Rothschild, how different is what we're going through in the Bush era under W from the 90s and the 80s in terms of civil liberties in the United States? I mean, again, you've been covering this beat for 25 years.
Well, there is continuity. There's continuity throughout U.S. history. I mean, to some extent, it's reminiscent of the McCarthy period, probably not quite so bad. For most people in this country, I would put it to you, Bob, that for Muslim Americans and Arab Americans, it has been just as bad as the McCarthy period. And then there are other periods. There's this, COUNTELPRO program that the FBI did to spy on activists in the 1960s and 1970s, and that's going on again. And in the 70s and 80s, there was the FBI spying on C-SPACE, the Committee in Solidarity of the People of El Salvador. So while those actions were proved to be illegal ultimately, now a lot of those things are legal. They're legal because Attorney General Ashcroft, who now looks better in hindsight than Attorney General Gonzalez, but Attorney General Ashcroft lifted the Edward Levy guidelines, the guidelines from the Attorney General, Republican under Gerald Ford's administration, who said after all the abuses of the 60s and 70s by J. Edgar Hoover that the police can't infiltrate political groups, that the police can't wantonly spy on people and record their names with camcorders, but now unless there's a strong predicate of criminal activity. But right now, at any protest, you see the cameras out. You know, everyone from the campus police to the FBI to the Pentagon, you know, has got their little camcorder recording who's there.
You have a chilling quote from former Attorney General John Ashcroft at the beginning of the first chapter. I just want to read it because I suspect some of our listeners have heard it, but it still is worth hearing one more time. This is former Attorney General John Ashcroft. "To those who scare peace-loving people with phantoms of lost liberty, my message is this: your tactics only aid terrorists. They give ammunition to America's enemies and pause to America's friends." And that's John Ashcroft. And the reason I wanted to read that is because it seems like if you accept the logic of that premise, then everything in this book follows.
It's absolutely true. And actually, you know, Ashcroft's comment, that is really a retelling of the definition of treason, which is to give aid and comfort to the enemy. So he's saying anyone who's talking about lost liberties, and I love the phantom of lost liberties as if it's not happening, is essentially committing an act of treason, which is a capital offense in the United States. So, you know, that was an amazing statement for the Attorney General to make, and it came on down the line, too. I remember reporting on a comment that a member of the California police, state police, I believe, when he was spying on a protest, he said, well, if by protesting the U.S. war, that is tantamount to supporting the terrorists. So in a way, that is being a terrorist. So they just, you know, skip the middle step there and just say, if you're a protester, you're a terrorist.
You know, what was striking to me when I read this book was how often simply being critical, not even wildly critical, but even mildly critical of the Bush administration was grounds for harassment or even arrest.
Yeah, a couple of the cases I just find unbelievable. One of my favorites is the case of Brett Bercy, who, and a lot of the listeners may know someone like this, who's active in the State Coalition for Peace and Justice. He happens to be in South Carolina and heads up the South Carolina Coalition for Peace and Justice. He was going to the airport in Columbia, South Carolina, when Bush was coming through to fundraise for Lindsey Graham one day in 2003, I think it was. And so he's holding up a sign protesting the Iraq War, and there are other people standing next to him with buttons supporting Lindsey Graham or supporting the great President Bush. They weren't singled out by the Secret Service and told to go to a free speech zone half a mile away. No, it was only Brett Bercy who was told that by the Secret Service. And bless his heart, Brett Bercy responds, I thought America was a free speech zone. But he decides he'll negotiate with the Secret Service or try. He says, I'll go 100 yards, across the street here. But they said no. They insisted he went to the free speech zone, and he wanted the president to be able to see his sign. So he said no, so he was arrested. He was prosecuted by the state. The state eventually dropped the charges, but then the U.S. attorney there with the incredible lineage and name of Strom Thurmond Jr., the son of the hideous segregationist senator, files a federal charge against Brett Bercy and accuses him under the statute against assassinations of the president because he wouldn't obey what the Secret Service was doing. And he got a conviction. Brett Bercy was convicted and fined $500 for that.
Absolutely extraordinary. Before we go through some of the other examples in the book, and there are 82 different chapters that you've researched and documented in a whole variety of ways of not just the government but also commercial interests, taking away people's rights and civil liberties because they expressed a political viewpoint peacefully that someone in power disagreed with. Let's talk a little bit more about what the Bush administration has actually done policy-wise to change the civil liberties landscape in the United States. Why don't you just give a thumbnail, if you can, Matt, of some of the key developments of the past 5 or 6 years?
Yeah, well, I think the two landmark ones that are, you know, on either side of the bookshelf marked the demise of democracy are the Patriot Act and the Military Commissions Act. I mean, the Patriot Act allows the police to go into your home when you're not there and ransack through your belongings and put on your computer a recording device called a magic lantern that records every single keystroke you put on that computer, and then they leave and they don't need to tell you about it for, you know, a month or 6 months or a year or more. I mean, what kind of right to privacy do we have if they do that? And then the Military Commissions Act, not only does it set up these kangaroo courts down in Guantanamo or anywhere the president wants to put a detainee, but it says we have no due process rights, that we cannot, if we're called an enemy combatant by the president, challenge that in court, especially if we're not a U.S. citizen. So, and actually he's put U.S. citizens in military rigs and said they don't deserve to go to court. One of them was Jose Padilla and the other was Yasser Hamdi, a real laugher in one of the Justice Department's arguments before the Supreme Court on one of those two cases is that they said they kept them in solitary confinement for their own good for humanitarian purposes. I mean, these guys will throw anything against the wall and hope that something will stick.
Talk a little bit more, if you would, about the Bush administration and its commitment to the rule of law. I mean, this extraordinary renditions strikes me off the top of my head as being something that is in contradiction to international law and treaties we've signed, isn't it?
It's a blatant disregard and violation of the Geneva Conventions and the Convention Against Torture. A lot of what the Bush administration has been doing on torture is, I mean, the idea that the United States is engaged in what we would call disappearances, if it was done by a Latin American dictator any time in the 60s, 70s, or 80s, should shock the American people. But that's what's been going on. The CIA or other agents of the U.S. military would grab someone and send them to some secret prison overseas for a while there. Bush said he'd suspended the program, but he's resumed the program, as the Washington Post series on Dick Cheney recently that came out told us. I mean, so they're really blatantly violating the Geneva Conventions down the line. The Geneva Conventions protect everybody. Now, the Bush administration and the O'Reillys of this world will say, well, they're different from other combatants in the past. They're not wearing uniforms. Hell, you know, the colonists weren't wearing uniforms when they fought the British. I mean, we go way back with that. And the idea that somehow there is a group of people not covered by the Geneva Conventions, all you have to do is read the Geneva Conventions. Read Article 3, Common Article 3 of the Geneva Conventions. Everybody's covered.
Matt Rothschild, but, I mean, one of the arguments that I hear, and I suspect you do, and it's all over places like Fox News and really the entirety of the mainstream news media, is that, okay, these are extraordinary steps. They're regrettable. But this is a new kind of war, uniforms or no uniforms. We're dealing with people who just a few of them have the power to set off a bomb that could take out an entire city, that could kill millions of people. And that if we use the conventional weapons that were or tools that were ratified in 1945, by the time we're sort of alert to the problem, 10 million people are dead. This is at extraordinary times, requires extraordinary flexibility on the part of government to be effective. And maybe that's one of the reasons why we haven't had a terrorist attack in the United States since 9/11 is because the Bush administration has been so aggressive in ferreting out these bad guys before they can get untracked. How do you respond to that?
Well, I don't think that's the reason why we haven't, and I assume that at some point, you know, in the not-too-distant future, there is going to be another terrorist attack here, God forbid. But I think what the Bush administration has been doing is trying to make us fear that this is the worst time ever, the least safe time ever in the United States, and therefore we should surrender our rights to them. Look, there have been times that were much more jeopardizing to our future than right now. I mean, any time during the Cold War, the Soviet Union could have launched an ICBM and destroyed, or many of them, and with nuclear weapons on top, and destroyed the whole country. Al-Qaeda does not have the power to destroy this country. Bush has the power to destroy this democracy, and I think he's doing it. We have plenty of tools in the FBI's hand, in the Justice Department's hand, prior to the Patriot Act, or certainly prior to the Military Commissions Act, to try to apprehend people. Hell, if the FBI was not asleep at the wheel and if Bush wasn't out, you know, chopping wood on his ranch, they had plenty of warnings to stop 9/11. But because he was so incompetent, they had this terrible thing happen on our soil, and as a consequence, you know, Bush has seized on it to destroy our liberties.
Our guest is Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine based out of Madison, Wisconsin, and the author of the brand new book just published on July 4th, You Have No Rights, Stories of America in an Age of Repression. It is an extraordinary book with stories and articles and research, 82 specific examples of people having their rights taken away from them for their political viewpoints, oftentimes being arrested, losing their jobs. Simply stuff that was simply unimaginable to me. And this was a chilling book. I urge everyone to read it and consider it carefully. It's also a very easy book to read. I just sailed through it. It was like a knife through butter. Matt, one of the things that also came out in this book that I think was really disturbing was that this is not simply the government. That, in fact, oftentimes other institutions, either taking the cue from the government or working with the government, did the government's work, commercial interest with their employees, or just sort of going after people. And the most striking example of this that comes off to mind is the National Security Agency's monitoring of people's telephone calls illegally or semi-illegally. The Bush administration claims it's not illegal. And doing this with the full cooperation of the telephone company, specifically AT&T.
Yeah, a judge already has said that this is blatantly illegal. Judge Anna Diggs Taylor of Detroit said that the NSA spying, This is another bit of the edifice of repression. The NSA spying is a blatant violation of people's First Amendments and the Fourth Amendment, and also a violation of the separation of powers. And she said the president is not a king. You can't get much more blatant than that. Look, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act says the only way that the President of the United States can spy on people who are U.S. citizens here in the United States, the exclusive means, is by going to the FISA court and getting a warrant. And now Bush has done, on more than a dozen occasions, signed a paper that said, for the next 45 days, I'm not going to do that, and we're going to let the NSA spy on people anyway. Well, the president can't just say, I'm not going to abide by this law. Actually, when John Dean heard the president say that, John Dean of Watergate fame, said this was the first time he's ever heard a president of the United States confess to an impeachable offense. And it's beyond me that people aren't outraged about this and calling for the impeachment of Bush and Cheney for this and for the myriad other crimes they've committed.
Well, you know, our phone lines, were this a live show, would be lit up right now on exactly that point. This is a subject of considerable interest to the listeners in Media Matters, with most of the guests who call in. And we're taping this a couple of days before it's airing on July 8th, so please don't call in and try to raise that issue, but I want to raise it. And this week, earlier in the week, as you know, Matt, President Bush gave a quasi-pardon to Scooter Libby for his felony, sort of relieving him from having to serve any time for his crime, although he acknowledged the crime had been committed. And this has increased the charge or the campaign to see President Bush impeached. What do you think of impeachment? I mean, other than principle, is it something worth putting energy into, or is it sort of divert people away from other more important fights?
I think there can be nothing more important than impeachment, because it's not a partisan thing. It's not about gamesmanship or payback. This is about whether we're going to have a democracy or not in this country, and what can be more important than that? Here we have our two highest officials committing one serial criminal act after another against the Constitution. They've been subverting the Constitution, and actually subverting the Constitution is what the founders meant by other high crimes and misdemeanors. You know, it's not bribery. They're not taking money under the table. It's not treason. They're not working for a foreign power. But the founders knew that it could happen, that there'd be a president or a vice president who was acting like a king, and they just fought this war against royalty, and they didn't want a president to assume regal powers. And so they had that catchphrase, other high crimes and misdemeanors, from lying this country into war, to breaking the UN Charter by waging an aggressive war in Iraq, to this torture policy, to the illegal detentions and disappearances, to the NSA spying, to the Valerie Plame case, to this U.S. attorney's, violating our electoral, selling our electoral process by having the U.S. attorneys file bogus charges against people in order to tilt the outcome of an election. This is one high crime after another. And it's time for Nancy Pelosi to put impeachment back on the table. She said she'd taken it off the table. It's got to be on the table.
You know, when I was reading this book and going through the Bush administration's campaigns against civil liberties and these incident after incident, my mind kept saying, what about the Democrats? I mean, this isn't purely a dictatorship yet. Congress still has to pass budgets. It still passes laws. And now Congress, a majority of the members are Democrats, and Democrats weren't entirely powerless before the 2006 election. What's your scorecard for the Democratic Party for its response to the Bush administration since 9/11 through to today?
Well, it's been horrendous. It was absolutely horrendous. They were accomplices in most of these crimes after 9/11. They gave Bush a huge blank check to wage war anywhere in the world he wanted after 9/11. And, of course, they passed the Patriot Act 98-1 in the Senate, with the sole exception, brave, courageous exception, of my Senator Russ Feingold on that one. And more recently they signed off on the Military Commissions Act. The real act of cowardice there was actually not a Democrat but a Republican, Arlen Specter, who was then head of the Republican Judiciary Committee in the Senate. And he said that the Military Commissions Act, by getting rid of habeas corpus, was going to turn back the clocks 900 years. So he tried to get an amendment passed to get that out of the bill. That failed, and so we turned around and voted for the Military Commissions Act, even though it was turning the clocks back 900 years. So, but the Democrats, didn't filibuster that. They could have filibustered it and stopped it, and they didn't.
Our guest is Matthew Rothschild, author of the brand new book, You Have No Rights, Stories of America in an Age of Repression, an extraordinary new book just published this week by The New Press, based out of New York City. Matt Rothschild is the editor of the Progressive magazine based in Madison, Wisconsin. He's been a frequent guest on our program in the past. He's been covering American politics and world politics and especially the civil liberties beat for decades now. Matt, what's the website for the Progressive magazine if folks want to go there?
Yeah, the website is easy. It's progressive.org. Don't go to progressive.com unless you want insurance. You need to go to progressive.org.
Progressive.org, and if you want insurance, go to progressive.com, but make sure you go to .org first. Let's go through some of the examples in the book, because this is an issue that sounds sort of abstract. People's eyes can sometimes glaze over. Oh, yeah, civil liberties are lost. And they think, well, it's always, okay, maybe they're lost for someone, but, you know, maybe that person was asking for it, you know. You never really know for sure. But when you read the stories and the episodes that you chronicle in this book, I think it forever blows up the notion that there's any rationale or justification for what's been going on in this country. One of the you've done a nice job of organizing them into, like, oh, it looks like 12 or 13 different categories that you break them down under. And let's just go through some of the categories and explain why you categorize them in that way. One of them is called the knock on your door. What do you mean by this category, and what's a good example of how that's taken place?
Well, this is just, you know, police coming and taking you out of your home or coming to your place of business and interrogating you. And to me, the person who strikes the biggest chord with people is Mark Schultz, who was working at a bookstore in Atlanta in 2003, and Harry Potter book, a new Harry Potter was coming out, and it was a Saturday. He knew it was going to be a really busy day, so he wanted to get pumped with caffeine, so he goes to Caribou Coffee. His father actually had downloaded something from the Internet called Weapons of Mass Stupidity about Fox News, and his father is a progressive as he is, and they couldn't stand what Fox News was doing, all the propagandizing that it does, you know. And so Mark Schultz is standing in line at Caribou Coffee in Atlanta reading Weapons of Mass Stupidity, and evidently someone was standing behind him in line and called the cops and the FBI on him, because just a couple days later at the bookstore, here comes the FBI. Why were you reading this kind of material? First, they asked all sorts of questions about his politics. He didn't know where they were coming from. Finally, when they asked him about the material he was reading, he scratched his head and said, oh, that must have been the article my dad had downloaded and sent to me. But this guy was visited by the FBI simply because he was reading something critical of Fox News.
Yeah, when did Fox News get, you know, written into the Patriot Act as, like, you aren't allowed to criticize them?
Yeah, I mean, and it's you know, one case like that after another. There was a, you know, the president right now, one of the things the president has done is issued these signing statements, which is unconstitutional. He should be impeached for.
Yeah, explain what those are, Max. I suspect a lot of our listeners aren't familiar with that term.
Yeah, I mean, this is just unbelievable. According to our system of government, Congress passes the law, goes to the president. The president has only two choices. He either signs the law and sees that it's faithfully executed, or he vetoes the law. Bush is, you know, like Cheney gets another branch of government, Bush takes another option. And Bush has taken option number three that doesn't exist in the Constitution, which is to sign the bill and then append a little bit of an asterisk to it and put at the bottom a signing statement that says, I will enforce the law only to the extent that I agree with its interpretation of my constitutional duties, or it doesn't interfere with my constitutional duties as Commander-in-Chief. Well, that isn't an option in our system.
Unbelievable. Another category, Matt Rothschild, that you had, and this is not going in a particular order, but just from coming from my memory, you organized a bunch of episodes under Welcome to Our Place of Business. And this, is again, gets into where businesses get into the fray, too. Why did you use that category? What does it refer to? And what's a good example?
Well, the private sector has been kind of hostile to dissenters. And one case is the case of some Muslim Americans who are going to, of all places, a Denny's. You know, Denny's got into trouble for its discriminatory practices against African Americans. This is a case not against Denny's itself, but against a franchisee in Florida. There's a group of people who went down there. One guy, his name was Max Morgan. That wasn't his given name. His given name was Eham Mohammed. But Max Morgan understood the climate in the United States after 2001, so he changes his name to Max Morgan. Anyway, he's going down to Florida, to Isla Mirada, to go fishing. And they stop off at a Denny's in Dade County. and it's in the middle of the night, and they have a nice waitress who brings them their drinks, their waters and their sodas or whatever they're drinking. They order veggie omelets. The veggie omelets never show up. Finally, someone asks the manager there what's going on, and he says, Bin Laden's in the kitchen. And they knew that something was up then. And so they asked, what are you saying? He says, we don't serve Bin Laden's here. And then he got even worse, and he kicks them out and swears at them. And so they weren't really welcome in that Denny's. There's a huge lawsuit pending on this one, as you can imagine, because the Florida Equal Opportunity Commission investigated and sided with Max Morgan and his friends here. So that's still in the works. There's another example there just was a settlement on. This was an incredible case of Rick Santorum, the former senator from Republican, far-right Republican senator from Pennsylvania, was having a book signing near the border there of Delaware, actually inside Delaware. And several women wanted to go to the book signing because they disagreed with Santorum's views, and they wanted to take that opportunity to talk to the senator about that. They got to the Barnes & Noble early. There was a state trooper from Delaware who was in uniform but not working as a state trooper but working for Santorum or the store, and he kicked these people out. And he told them never again to come to that store, and for that matter, never again come to that mall. And when a couple women said, you know, we've got a right to be here, he put them under arrest. There was just a recent settlement that the ACLU of Delaware and the ACLU of Pennsylvania came out with so that their legal fees of these women who brought the lawsuit are covered, and they get some nominal fees and an apology from the state trooper. Again, this wasn't Barnes & Noble itself. It was the state trooper and two aides to Senator Rick Santorum. The senator didn't want to be bothered by any customer who didn't agree with him.
What sort of press coverage do these episodes generally get in the mainstream news media, and how much follow-up is there on these episodes?
You know, Bob, I'm glad you asked that, because this is one of the things that infuriates me more than anything. There's rarely any press coverage of these items. Sometimes there's a small story here or there, even in some of the mainstream media. Yes, they do occasionally cover them, but they cover them as if they are episodic, as if they are isolated, as if they're unique and they never happen. They miss the trend. You know, I've got 82 examples in this book. I left about 150 examples on my computer because I've been covering this for a long time, and there are a lot of stories I've never even reported on. There is a huge trend here that the media miss when they just do one story at a time. They act, or they give the impression that this is something that is extraordinary or has never happened before or is completely unconnected, disconnected to other incidents or disconnected to Bush administration policies. And nothing could be further than the truth on either of those.
Our guest is Matt Rothschild, editor of the Progressive Magazine and author of the brand new book, You Have No Rights, Stories of America in an Age of Repression, just published this week on July 4th by the New Press based out of New York City. Matt Rothschild spoke with me. This was taped a couple days before going on air, so please don't call in with any questions or comments. Sit back, relax, enjoy the end of the holiday week. Considering the state of civil liberties, what an appropriate week for this book to come out with Matt Rothschild and myself here on WILL AM 580. Matt, another section of the book that you have a series of episodes under is called Up in the Air. And this was one, I think, that really resonated with me. So why don't you talk what this category is and what you found?
Well, this is about people who have trouble traveling. And I got this is one of the early stories I did under my McCarthyism watch, which is on our website at progressive.org, where I really got a sense that, wow, there's something big going on here that I really need to pay attention to and write up and try to publicize, because I got wind of the no-fly list before anyone had covered the no-fly list, because there was a group of peace action Milwaukee activists who were wanting to go to a World Bank IMF meeting in Washington, D.C. one April after 9/11. And they weren't allowed to get on board. They were detained so long that the plane left without them, and they had to take a plane the next day. And you know, there were a couple nuns, there was a priest, and no one could figure out what it was that they were being detained for, except that there was some mysterious list that these people happened to be on, or one of them was on, or a couple of them were on. So I started to follow that afterwards. But so that's on one end of the spectrum, and not the serious end. On the even more grave, much more grave end of this spectrum is the disappearances. There's the case that I talk about that has gotten some publicity, the case of Maher Arar, who is the Canadian-Syrian citizen who was going back over to Syria He came back to the United States. He made a mistake. He decided he'd stop in JFK before going to Canada. And by stopping very briefly at JFK, he was nabbed. And by the CIA, they grabbed him, they sent him to Jordan, and he was tortured there. And he was tortured in Syria. And so he was, he had his rights violated. He was put in this tiny cell with a lot of rats for 10 months and beaten by a belt with studs on it. And this kind of thing, simply because he was trying to change planes in JFK. I mean, talk about having no rights. He had no rights whatsoever. Between here on this traveling is the problem that Muslim Americans and Arab Americans have repeatedly as they're trying to come across the border. I've been doing a story about a guy who's not in this book, a recent story, a guy named Zachariah Muhammad Reed. That wasn't his given name. He was born Edward Eugene Reed Jr., lives in Toledo. He's been on the firefighting force there for 11 years, Bob, and for 20 years was a National Guardsman. Five times in the last 7 months, he's been stopped coming across the border. One time he was asked, what about this letter to the editor you've been writing, to the Toledo Blade, which protested policies of the U.S. government in supporting Israel's repression of the Palestinians and Bush's war against Iraq. Can you believe that? They're looking at this guy's letters to the editor. And then this last time, after I wrote up the story, they asked him, why were you talking to progressive.org?
Do you think, Matt, speaking of that, that you are being surveyed? I mean, are you, based on your research, are you the sort of person who they're going to keep a closer eye on?
Bob, you must be talking to my wife because she's worried I'm going to be on the no-fly list. But,
I do talk to your wife. That's why I'm wondering.
I can't believe that is something that they would be looking at. And if I'm on their list, boy, they have way too much of people to look at, and they're missing any action that there actually is out there. So, but I think a lot of people raise the question not so much about me, but about them. You know, should I go to this protest if the police have camcorders? You know, should I go to this meeting if it's being infiltrated? And the answer to that is absolutely yes. Because if you don't exercise your rights now, they've already taken your rights away. They've already succeeded in ripping up the Constitution. So we need to act as though we have the rights that were given to us as citizens. And we can't surrender those rights ahead of time, certainly.
Yeah, I mean, the operative term in civil liberty circles is what's called the chilling effect, that the effect of repression of these 82 people isn't just 82 people whose voices are silenced or intimidated, but it's everyone else who sees what happens and therefore says, maybe I should better keep quiet myself so I don't join those 82.
Yeah, I certainly hope that's not the conclusion people draw from reading this book. I mean, I tell the story of talking to some senior citizens in Madison a couple years ago when I was in the midst of this research, and a woman had asked some really good questions about it. She knew her McCarthyism history, and she was a real progressive, but at the end she says, can I get the Progressive magazine in a paper bag? And that almost just broke my heart.
Oh, my God. Our guest, Matt Rothschild, author of the new book, You Have No Rights, Stories of America in an Age of Repression, a terrific new book just published this week, appropriately enough, on July 4th, excuse me, by the New Press. A few of the chapters, Matt, deal with schools, high schools, colleges, and universities, and what's going on campuses, which, of course, is always going to be a real testing ground for free speech, since in theory those are places where ideas should be flowing freely and without any inhibition. Talk a little bit about what you've been finding.
Well, it's amazing the infiltration that's been going on and the surveillance that's been going on campuses. I got wind of this first when there was an infiltration at Drake University in Iowa, because the peace and justice community there in Des Moines, which is a vibrant community in the progressive world, they were holding a Bring Our National Guardsmen Home conference at Drake. And the police and the FBI wanted the list of everyone who attended, all the members of the local National Lawyers Guild chapter, the guild was involved in organizing it, and they wanted the university to fork over the names. The university fortunately did not answer that subpoena. And then there was a huge hue and cry from this community that did get some mainstream press coverage, notably in the New York Times, which helped put pressure to bear on the U.S. prosecutor, so the prosecutor in this case relented and took the subpoenas back. But that's the kind of thing that's been happening. Also, I tell the story of a similar case at the University of Texas Austin Law School. A woman named Sahar Aziz was doing a conference on feminism and Islam, and there were two Army intelligence lawyers there undercover taking notes, and then after the conference ended, they wanted to talk to her, and they wanted to get the names of everyone who attended that conference. They didn't get it, but that is the kind of thing that's happening, and it really makes you wonder about how much of this surveillance is going on. The other thing is some teachers have been actually fired. This is very reminiscent of McCarthyism. A couple teachers have been fired for talking about peace or anti-war issues in the classroom.
Yeah, to the high school, you have several episodes of high school teachers losing jobs, being harassed, which are just stunning.
Yeah, I mean, the one case is Deb Mayer, who was teaching in Bloomington. Hers wasn't a high school. It was a 4th, 5th, and 6th grade. But she was teaching to the curriculum. And the curriculum was Time for Kids. That is Time Magazine for Kids. Boy, they start them early, don't they, with Time Magazine. Anyway, so Time Magazine for Kids had a bit on the protests against the war. So one of the students in her class said to Deb Mayer, the teacher, would you ever go to one of these demonstrations? And all that she said was, if I'm driving by one of these protests and they have those signs, honk for peace, I might honk my horn. Well, that was so subversive that one of the students told her parents, and her parents the next day, irate, come to talk to the principal and say they don't want their student having to face all this kind of subversive talk in the classroom. And the principal, rather than saying, you know, calm down to the parents and, you know, she was teaching to the curriculum, she just answered a student's question, the principal said, you can't talk about peace again in this classroom. And then they didn't renew her contract. She was on a 1-year, was likely to be renewed if she was doing her job well, which she said she was, and she had some write-ups to that effect. But at the end, she was booted.
You know, one of the things, Matt Rothschild, in this book that you elected not to do was include some of the episodes where celebrities were harassed for their political viewpoints. Tim Robbins being disinvited to appear at the Baseball Hall of Fame because he opposed the Iraq War in 2004, I believe. And then the Dixie Chicks, of course, for their well-publicized run-ins with Clear Channel and some of the commercial radio stations over their criticism of President Bush. Why didn't you put the celebrities in? What was your thinking?
Well, it's an interesting question, and I wrestled with it. But I think, you know, the case of the celebrities gets a lot of attention in the media by the virtue of the fact that they're celebrities. And they put themselves out there anyway in the public to face scorn or to face the applause. And so the fact that, A, you know, they intentionally are out there, and, B, that they're being covered, suggested to me that I should leave them out and instead focus on people that readers have never even heard of, because that's where the repression, that's where the suppression really bites. You know, if it's that neighbor down the street who had that anti-Bush sign in his yard, and that sign was ripped up at night or burned up the next day. You know, that's the creepiness here, not so much that, you know, a Tim Robbins or Susan Sarandon or the Dixie Chicks would get, you know, a lot of slurs sent their way, as disgusting as that kind of dialogue is. But it was more troublesome to me is that everyday people who are trying to exercise just minimally their rights, you know, whether it's a protester with a sign or whether it's a Muslim American trying to go across the Canadian or American border, you know, that their rights are violated. And we need to attend to these everyday kind of things, not the big celebrity things.
I got a two-part follow-up for you, Matt Rothschild. First, and this is coming from some of my conservative acquaintances when I've discussed issues with them, these issues they've raised. So I want to see what you think. Is there evidence that when Democrats are in power, Bill Clinton, Jimmy Carter, LBJ, that they use the power of the federal government to go after conservatives and right-wingers and harass them in the manner that people on the left and progressives and critical voices towards the Bush administration are being harassed in this book? And secondly, is there any evidence in the last 6 years that people who are very conservative politically are being harassed for being too conservative, this is like a nonpartisan harassment of speech?
Well, on the first one, I mean, I do give an example here at the Democratic convention, the John Kerry convention in 2004, where he didn't allow anyone in there, or his organizers didn't allow anyone into the convention with their own signs. One guy even came in with a Kerry sign and he wasn't allowed in. But other people like Medea Benjamin from Code Pink had anti-war signs and they weren't allowed in. So this, the impulse to suppress and to repress is not only among those in the Republican Party or in the White House right now. Now, as far as conservative views being oppressed or suppressed or repressed, I don't think that they are being repressed by the government. I mean, here we have really, in my book, example after example of the Secret Service or the FBI or your local police going after you, and then in some cases firing you if you're in the schools. And I don't think that kind of thing happens to the extent. It might happen in the schools, but it certainly doesn't happen to the extent that the police are going after people for conservative speech.
But have you heard about? Have you heard about like a high school teacher who's a big George W. Bush supporter, who's really pro-war, being called on the carpet for wearing their politics on their sleeve in the class?
No, I don't think it's about a conservative criticizing the government. It's more like a conservative expressing their views on some issue that may run afoul. But it's interesting. I'm reminded by your question, Bob, of I was invited to a local school here outside of Madison to talk about the movie Good Night and Good Luck, the movie about McCarthyism. I was invited by a teacher, and then I was disinvited by the principal, and the principal has a picture of Dick Cheney up on our wall, so that might give you an idea.
Our guest is Matt Rothschild, the author of the brand new book, You Have No Rights, Stories of America in an Age of Repression, just published by the New Press. Matt is also the editor of the Progressive magazine, approaching its 100th birthday, based up in Madison, Wisconsin. And you can learn more about the Progressive and see its website at progressive.org. Progressive.org. We've only got a few minutes left, Matt, and we barely skimmed the surface of this rich book, these stories of suppression and repression of civil liberties and free speech rights in the United States in the past 6 years, going on as we speak today. While you didn't do celebrities, you did have a section on how artists are being harassed. Well, give an example of that.
Well, one of the early cases was a museum in Dallas called the Art Car Museum. They had a exhibit out against Bush, but it actually was against Bush Sr. and against the first Gulf War. But anyway, one day, Donna Wonka, who is running the museum, gets a knock on the door an hour before the museum is supposed to open, and she says, you know, we're not open right now. They say it's the FBI and the Secret Service. They say, we hear there's some anti-American art in here. Now, that is reminiscent of McCarthyism, if nothing is. And so they came in, they took a walk around, they took down the names of the artists, and they were especially interested in something in the middle of the table, which was a camera that was going 360 degrees, and she explained to them that that camera is supposed to illustrate that the government is watching us. But they took that information down, too. I mean, that's pretty incredible to me.
And then, moving quickly, if we can, you have one of the penultimate section of the book is called This Campaign Event is Closed. And we're coming into an election year. This seems like a fairly important topic.
Yeah, I mean, can you actually show up when Bush is coming through town? Are you allowed to go to a public event and have a sign that says end the war or that Bush should be impeached or that Bush is criminal? Or is the President of the United States like some medieval king who can come to town and whisk away the riffraff and not have to hear or see any discontent in the countryside? I'm afraid that it's becoming the latter in this country, and that is so antithetical to what our founders wanted when they gave us this right to free speech, this right to assemble, this right to redress our government for our grievances against the government. Those rights are being stripped out.
Give an example, if you would, of how that's taken place.
Well, I mean, there's this case of the three teachers who went to Oregon with their Protect Our Civil Liberties shirts, and they were kicked out of that event. There have been a lot of cases where Bush was coming through town, a small town in Wisconsin called Platteville, Wisconsin, and a guy named Frank Vandenbosch wanted to distill his animosity toward Bush to its essence. So he came up with a poster that had four initials on it, F-U-G-W, and he was arrested for disturbing the peace. I called up the officer who arrested him and said, this guy's exercising his free speech rights. Why did you arrest him? And he said, well, two people next to him said he was disturbing them, so therefore he was disturbing the peace. I mean, so there's no understanding, really, a lot of times by law enforcement about what our constitutional rights and liberties are.
And the book concludes, Matt, with a section that sort of where this points to, I guess, is why you put it there, which was called Goon Violence. And talk a little bit about that, if you would.
Well, the climate of repression comes down from the government and filters to other citizens. And one of the stories I tell here is about Muhammad and Sonia Cameron. Sonia Cameron describes herself as blonde-haired, blue-eyed, American-born. She married a Pakistani man. They lived in Georgia. They still do. She visited Walmart a lot of times and got hassled by customers there because she had dressed herself in a veil and her little kids in a veil and her baby she was carrying, and they say, how can you demean your family like this? And she said, actually, we're very proud of our religion. And they had proud to be Muslim on their license plates in the parking lot, and someone had gone out and on the back window scrawled the word killers in the dust on the window. She tried to let that go. Her husband said, you know, don't worry about it. But the next week, she's nursing her baby at 2 in the morning, and she hears something in the driveway. She turns around. Her van is on fire. And the fire department comes, and they say, did you look at your garage? And on the garage, in spray paint, killers go home.
Extraordinary. Again, Matt Rothschild, I want to congratulate you on the book, You Have No Rights. This is just filled with stories like this, which, you know, I once thought couldn't happen here and most definitely are happening here now. When I read this book, I want to know, well, what can we do to stop it? Of course, and I think that's probably the question you're going to be getting if you haven't gotten it already. This is so outrageous, so much of this. What can someone listening to this show do to stop this from happening, to prevent it?
Well, we need to go out and protest for our rights. The immediate thing we can do is ask our legislators to repeal the Military Commissions Act, which was one of the most anti-American acts ever put on the books. I think we need to get to impeachment of Bush and Cheney in a real hurry here, because they are the ones who've been designing these policies of repression. And if we let them get away with their criminal acts, we'll be saying not only to them but to their successors that you can take the rights of Americans away with impunity.
Are there any Democrats who've been sort of carrying the ball on these issues? If the party as a whole maybe hasn't been that effective by your standard, are there any individuals who you think people can look to for leadership?
In the Senate, I think Russ Feingold and Patrick Leahy have been the best. In the House, Dennis Kucinich, who has already submitted a bill of impeachment against Dick Cheney, has been one of the champions on these issues.
Do you know if other countries engaged in the war on terror are having a similar attack on civil liberties within their borders?
Well, it's interesting because Canada, which has been an ally, so-called ally in the war on terror, has done something totally different than the way the Bush administration has gone, and that is it has tried to re-examine its commitment to civil liberties, rededicate itself to civil liberties, because it recognized the excesses that the Bush administration was committing, including against Canadian citizens, one of whom I talked about, Maher Arar, who was disappeared by the Bush administration and tortured by a client state. And so they've come to a better appreciation of civil liberties, where we've kind of come to the opposite here.
And you say you're still getting as many episodes, Matt Rothschild, to fill up your pages of your McCarthy Watch today as you did a few years ago. It's not getting any better?
It's not getting noticeably better. I mean, I just did a story about a teacher who was fired because he showed Baghdad ER, the documentary, in his class. And I just did a story on a poet named Max Wheat, 80 years old in Nassau County, New York. He was designated as the poet laureate, the first poet laureate of the county. But then the day he was supposed to get the award, county commissioners read some anti-Iraq poems that he had written and stripped him of that honor. So that stuff's still happening.
Our guest today has been Matthew Rothschild, editor of the Progressive Magazine, author of the brand new book, You Have No Rights, Stories of America in an Age of Repression. Matt Rothschild, thank you so much for joining us today on Media Matters.
Bob, it's been a real pleasure. Thanks a lot.
I'm Bob McChesney. I'll be back 1 week from today. I want to thank Mike Pritchard for doing his terrific work engineering this broadcast, and we'll be back live with you 1 week from today. Thank you all very much. Have a good week.